Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for Bianca and Jay from the pop reggae rock band Serenation. Woo-hoo. Bianca, Jay, welcome.
Hello. Hey.
Thanks for having us.
So stoked to have you guys here. Yeah, I know.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, you're like extended family through Paul, so I'm happy to have you be official family now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Paul, thank you, Paul.
Yes.
Yep. Love you, Paul.
Shout out Paul, of course.
Mr. King.
Yes. So I know you guys have been in the game for a minute, and some people are going to be familiar with you, but some aren't. So I always do this. Let's start at the start. Tell me where you guys see Serenation coming together.
That's an interesting question. What do you mean by that exactly? Like where we started?
Yeah, like because I know lots of times lots of bands, you can have a couple rehearsals, you can start playing, you know, maybe we do a gig or two,
yeah.
And then it hits us, wait a minute, we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... I mean, it started out in middle school, believe it or not. Me and Bianca went to the same middle school.
Awesome.
And she was a lot younger than me. And I didn't know she was going to be a musician. I didn't know I was going to be a musician.
Neither of us did.
Yeah, he had no idea. And then I grew up and had tried to become a singer for a couple bands. And while I was doing that, she was learning how to play music. And then mm-hmm. she met Adam. And that's our guitar player. And he fueled her even more. She became a real musician. He was a musician. And then my band broke up and their band broke up.
Stars aligned.
I was going to say, the serendipitous breakups.
Yep, I was singing in a bathroom and Adam was playing at the restaurant I was singing in the bathroom of. And the guy he was playing with said, "You should start a band. You got a good voice." And he goes, "But don't take my bass player." And I walked out and there was Adam. He was playing bass. And I was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Dude, you know, I just want to make music, man." And I said, "Me too. Let's give it a shot." He came over the next day and we started writing. And I feel like we knew. He told Bianca who he had met up with. And she goes, "I know him."
Oh, yeah.
She goes, "He's the one."
I knew him, like, because he was always so charismatic and likable. I'm like, if he has a good voice, it's a done deal. And then when we got together, I was like, he has a great voice, good guy, we get along, we're writing good songs, this is it. I knew immediately it was it.
So what was the musical journey for you? Maybe you can start. What was the music journey for you independently that you were in these bands, that you wanted to make music? What was the drive that made you start doing that? Did you just open your mouth one day and you're like, "Hey, I can sing"? Or it was just like, yo,
I first heard Chris Cornell's voice.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, "Oh my goodness, what is that? That is cool." And then I thought, "I want to sound like that." And then, you know,
nice bar to set.
And and so I just started listening to music and then trying to emulate it, and that's where it started. You know, I just would listen to the radio and try and sound as close as I could to what I was hearing. And then I figured out, well, now I want to figure out how to do this myself. And so I got with some friends from high school that I had known, and we started a band, and, you know, started writing songs and all that raw experience of dipping into your emotions and feeling what it is that you're trying to say. And it's just been an incredible thing, and it gets better and better. I've been getting tighter and tighter with these guys.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing experience. I think I didn't realize it up until recently how much I have fallen in love with the process and dedicated myself to it, even in times when I didn't feel I was dedicated.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, that will mission drift a little bit, because that's a good point. Being in a band can be very demanding, and sometimes it's hard to realize that when you start.
Yeah.
But you have to try to find a way to dedicate yourself to it and focus yourself on it. What are some of the things that you had to find changing in your life when you were like, wait a minute, this is more of a centerpiece. This isn't like, you know, our hobby is growing. My passion is growing.
Yeah, I think you'll do away with wasting idle time. You'll start to figure out, and I've been diving into it more and more recently, is that if you really do care and you really do want to, you know, see how far your potential can go, then you'll stop wasting your time with mundane things that don't get you closer to your goal.
Yeah.
And you will start going down the rabbit hole of finding things that are in alignment with your goals and part of the steps that you're taking to get there.
So do you find that being conscious of that is what's made it so now you can enjoy the process, where it used to be more power through the process to get to the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now it's like, what am I learning today? What is this piece that's going to come into the puzzle that's going to make it look a little better to everybody else? You know, what is it that I'm going to get today?
Right.
And yeah, and it's getting more and more exciting. The more you know, the more I say no to one thing and yes to the things that I want,
there
it gets more and more exciting to get deeper down the yeses.
And that's something that's almost impossible to envision at the beginning of the road, would you say?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the road, you're like a baby in the world. You have ideas. You have most definitely ideas of grandeur, you know?
Yeah.
And
you think you know everything.
Yeah, and you think you're going to come out there swinging, but then life gets real. And it says, hey, you thought you were this, but you need to recalibrate. You're not there yet. And, you know, you just take that and you got to work with it. You got to take that and figure out what it is that needs to be done to get you there.
Yeah, learning to work with it, that's the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's press rewind then a little bit. How is it that you decide to yourself you want to start playing bass? Do you see a bass, but you see Sting or somebody rip it up one day and you're like, I'm in?
Oh, man. Well, I started on guitar and my dad got me my first guitar and guitar lessons. And even though, ooh, it's a nice sound.
It sounds like a healthy cola.
Right? It's a healthy one, baby. Crazy cola.
And even though I did like guitar, I definitely wasn't like excelling at it the way I thought I should. I'm like, you know, I liked writing songs on guitar and everything. And then he did get me a bass. And honestly, at first I was like, it's cool. But then I played bass with a drummer. Mm. And that's when I was like, this is it for me. I'm done. Like, I'm ready to do this. And then I met Adam at that same time. And he helped me get so much better because he put me, started playing gigs right away, which I think helped so much because it's kind of like, threw me in the water and I had to learn how to swim, so to speak. And now I couldn't see it any other way. Like, I love playing bass. It's so much fun.
Well, that brings up a really interesting thing. We've been talking to some young bands lately, so I'm a little bit curious what your perspective is on this. When you first start a band, especially now, it's easy to write and curate, cultivate all your material for a year, make sure everybody's tight before you go on a stage and worry about honing your chops.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about what it was like for you guys. Maybe you can both touch on this. What it was like gigging first, throwing yourself in that deep end, what you think that experience was like compared to had you tried to sit on the egg.
I got thrown right in.
He did.
Adam said, you want to be in a band? I'll teach you.
We're
going to
do it.
He said, I'm going to put you through
the ringer. We're starting
tomorrow. Yeah. And I would say there was a lot of shots involved to loosen me up because the nerves were, you know, you're sitting there in front of all your peers. And right. We would do it we started at the restaurant, Ricky T's, that I was working at. And so I was performing for my peers and my friends and, like, people that I saw every day and they'd never seen me do it. And now I'm up here doing it. And then, like, you know, it was very nerve wracking.
Do you think you build confidence faster than you that way? Or do you feel like,
oh yeah, you have no choice. Birth by fire.
Yeah.
Trial by fire.
Yeah. That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't get, it's best not to have time to think about it. If you're going to do it, just jump in.
Yeah.
So take me back then to some of these first gigs. What was it like?
Oh, well,
if everybody gets thrown in the deep end together, that's a...
All right, so, like, in the beginning, we would play little bars and stuff like that, and, you know, and we figured out that we were getting kind of good. People were liking it and having fun, and then the bars started getting packed, and we were like, okay, we're doing good. But, I mean, then there was always, like, those random gigs where, you know, it's almost like a paid practice.
Yeah.
We showed up to Siesta Key, and I think they were all having a siesta because nobody was there. And you know, we played to, like, an empty room, but that we did that just to pay for our band to be able to perform somewhere else. So,
right.
You know, that's another thing in the beginning. You're going to have to make do. You're going to have to figure out how to make it work for your real project. So sometimes you need to do – we performed covers – as our full band to pay for our journey to do original music.
Yeah.
Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's a very smart thing that we did and people can implement as well, you know, and it keeps you in the realm of music so that you're staying sharp and those cover performances bleed into your original performances, and they feed the confidence and the show and everything. And they also help you to deal with the variables that come in so that you're not as worried. And when something does go wrong, you kind of have a better idea of how to deal with it on the spot.
Right.
You build your chops.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you mean it's a completely... The reason why I ask is because now we have the other side of the coin where you can build your chops sitting in front of YouTube and jam it all day long, and you go play and all of a sudden you're brilliant out of the gate because all you did was practice for no one instead of the favors. I commend
anybody who has the will power to be able to sit down and do that.
Yeah.
That is extremely tough. And if you fall in love with that process, good on you, because that is a hard one to do.
Yeah, right.
Takes exactly. forever, man.
Yeah. So, it's a lot funner to just jump in the water with your friends and do good or fail. It's a lot funner that way.
Get paid to do it. Like, practicing is tough.
Yeah, when you practice is a very tough thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's very important, though.
Yeah.
And it's cool for you guys to verbalize that, too, because it is now, I mean, I don't know if it's 50-50 or what the percentage is, but a lot of bands are created before they perform. You know what I mean? It's all buttoned up before they're on the stage.
Yeah.
So how long was the period where you were getting out there just trial by fire, having at it, between that point and when you go in and we got a body material and we're going to record now?
We actually recorded before we ever really played shows, which is unusual. But we like I said, when we first met up, we just started writing songs. It was crazy. I say we wrote like 3 or 4 songs within the first 2 days we were all even jamming together.
Damn.
So we were like, you know what? Let's just go record them. So that way when we start playing out, these people have something to go listen to. And I feel like that really helped us because like our local following, they saw us at Ricky's and we'd be like, oh, go check us out on Spotify instead of like, oh, we have nothing yet.
Right.
So I feel like that really, really helped us. The fact that we just went and recorded and then we started playing out.
We did have a CD that we could show them.
Yeah. It was a CD. It was like nine years ago.
So do you guys have this underlying mantra of everything has to be hit the ground running?
Hit the ground running.
That's an interesting... What do you mean by that exactly?
Like, it doesn't sound like at any point there's too much deliberation. It's a lot more agile.
We are doers.
When the moment comes down, it is act and go. But we do have, you know, meetings. We get together and we run ideas and we troubleshoot this. You know, we're not...
Oh, yeah. No, I don't mean it like that, but I mean it more like the paramount action is action. We need to do. We need to do above and beyond anything. We need to make sure we're recording. We need to make sure we're playing these gigs. We need to make sure we're doing the covers.
Yes.
Bottom line, no matter what we're sussing through, the goal is to always do.
Absolutely.
Yes, and build consistency with that do. Yes.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
You have to do it consistently.
Yeah.
Like, I think we learned... We were releasing music. We came out with the album. We had the album before we were even really performing. We came out, we had an album. Then we started writing a second album immediately. And then we got that album out pretty quick. And then after that, you know, everybody had a little lull with COVID.
Right.
But we kind of didn't know what to do. And, you know, you have this mentality of getting a label and having somebody bigger than you get you to where you want to go. And we kind of started learning, like, I think from 2020 on, it really started becoming more prominent that artists and people can be their own artists and people.
Mm.
Through social media and all the outlets that we have, you know, pay for a little bit of advertising and stuff like that. You've got everything that the label has.
Right.
And so it took us so long to figure out, okay, we don't need that. We can do this. We can just put this music out ourselves, and the people will judge us, and they'll choose whether or not we're going to do good or not, whether or not they like the songs. And if we're worthy and the songs are good and we keep working and we're consistent, then we get to keep moving.
Yeah.
You know, and that's – but you have to keep moving. And when we stopped for – I would say it was like 3 years almost. We released a few singles or something. Like,
yeah.
And it just was too slow.
It was too slow.
You've got to keep the engine at a medium, you know, a warm temperature. You've got to keep the engine going, feed it and keep it moving, keep the momentum going. Because once you stop, now the well has dropped and you have to pump it all back up
right
to where it was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned two words, album and singles. your both of your first efforts were regular full-length albums, yeah?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, and then you did a couple of singles.
Yeah.
And now you've got another album coming out?
Yeah.
Yep.
Full-length again?
Next month.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Omission Drift for a second. If you want to do a deep dive, we'd love to have you guys back do a deep dive. We'll go track by track on the record with the whole band if you want to.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
Because these songs are from, like, all over. Like, we've written with, like, Rome Ramirez and Howie Spengler and On Our Own. And it's, like, it would be so many stories for each track.
Very cool. It'd be a long podcast.
It would be long.
You guys are ready.
We do those. We do those as special episodes.
Okay,
cool. So we can full-on music nerd.
Okay.
No leash.
That would be awesome.
That would be really cool.
That would be really
cool.
So, since you guys have a habit of making albums and I don't want to say it this way, but there's really no way to put it. You're not scared to make an album. You'll write a full body of music. That's fine. But how do you feel about the way the game has kind of been tipped now, where in order to keep some level of water in this well, like you said, it's got to be singles every couple of months. You know, do you feel like that singles game is a detriment and you're just going to always do your album thing? Is it a weird thing for you guys to navigate not playing the singles game if you can write material that like that?
I think we do both. I think we've released 6 singles. We're about to release our 6th. And so it's kind of like, all right, let's release like a lot of singles, but then just put the rest on the album. And so it keeps like everything moving, but we kind of had this like big body of work just sitting there. And I'm like, let's just get it out there, you know, not overthink it. But I think that there, you know, you could do both. You know,
I love the process. I think they feed each other hand in hand, release those singles and build it up to the album.
Mm-hmm.
I learned from Russ that he would release a single. He actually released a single every week.
Yeah.
He was releasing a single every week until it worked for him. And it's like, if you got the capacity, I mean,
Go for it.
Every week you're releasing an album in yeah. 2 months, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it's that's why I asked, because if you got the material on tap, it seems like it becomes enticing now to play the singles game and not focus on writing an album.
You get your viewers hyper-engaged when you're doing the singles.
Just always releasing.
That's what it is that every month they're going to go, well, guess what? They're bringing me something next month,
mm-hmm.
and I want to see it. Yeah. And I want to hear it. And I've been listening to him already for the past 3 months. So I want to see what's coming next, you know? And you're building that rapport with those people. It's important.
Yeah.
So looking at it, that's an interesting way to look at it, building a rapport with your audience and not so much as like an obligatory thing. Because I know a lot of artists start to get that treadmill feeling, you know what I mean, or hamster wheel feeling, whatever you want to call it.
I think, I don't know, I just thought of this. It's kind of like when you're watching a series on Netflix and then somebody else watches one without you, and you kind of got left behind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to miss the episode. You're fully engaged in the series. We are your series. We're your series
That's
for
true.
Music. So we want to keep you engaged by giving you new episodes to listen to watch, everything, just like you're doing with this podcast.
Right.
And
That's an awesome way to look at it.
That is cool to look at it, actually.
So you're talking about releasing singles. That material will be on the full length, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so then this is the part B to that question.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel odd about giving away any portion of your movie before the whole movie?
Oh, because nowadays I feel like you have to always be putting something out there.
Okay, I guess the follow-up question is, do you feel at all odd that that the feeling is you have no choice? You have to?
It's almost like I feel like we came into the game and it was almost already like that. So I feel like it's all that we've ever known.
What do you mean by give away the movie? What do you mean by that?
Like, you know, you watch a trailer. Back in the day, a movie had a trailer, maybe two. Now you get a whole bunch of them and they're like 5 minutes.
Oh, you're talking about like the reels and everything that we release that are snippets of what's coming to
be? Yeah. Or if like, you know, Band X puts out an album that's got 10 songs on it and there were 4 or 5 singles that preceded it. So they literally gave away half the album before the album was out.
Oh, yeah.
It is funny how that is now.
Well, how many songs are on our album?
12.
And how many? We've released 6, so they get 6?
Yeah, they get 6 new songs, and we're planning on doing a deluxe possibly, so they'll get even more. But
that's cool. That's how it is.
There's also a thing that kind of scares me in reality, though, that is, you know, when you do release an album and there are some songs on there that you absolutely love, and you want them to get the proper light, and that's one thing that releasing singles does, is it puts the light on every, you know, it's
good
fully
point.
Illuminates each song.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that I would say is like the sadder side of releasing albums for me personally, is because I want all those songs, now that you can release songs single by single, I want all those songs to be in the light. I think they're all amazing. But I mean, that's like an arrogant thing to say.
Well, no.
But, you know, I do believe that we put a lot of hard work and a lot of effort into it, and I want y'all to hear it. And I just don't want it to get overlooked. But it happens, and that's part of the game, and it's okay, because we're going to make more, and we're just going to keep pushing.
So then let's press a little bit of rewind to making more. What is it like when you first go into the studio? Maybe not the first record, since that one was, you guys were way green as a band at that point. But once you guys are jamming and jiving a little bit more, what's the recording process like when you start to get it under your feet a little bit?
It's so smooth. It's so fun. It's like so, and our producer is like one of our best friends.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Josh Salday. We love that guy. And it's just, it's literally like a bunch of best friends hanging out, laughing. And then it's like, oh, I'm going to go do my part real quick.
We get pizza. We go, like, there's a little Mexican store down the street. We get cool stuff from there.
Love it.
It's fun. We look forward to it.
The bakery. Okay. I got a cat the last time we went to the studio.
He really did it. He went to get food, and then he came back with a cat. And I was like, all right, we have a cat now.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works, yeah, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah.
Great times at the studio.
Yeah.
So do you take at all a traditional approach in your tracking? Do you track live, since you guys are such a good live unit?
We do it in pieces.
Okay.
In pieces.
Everybody does their individual part. But we have the whole... We build the album before we go. Like,
right.
We'll have the songs and everything, structure, and basically the main idea of where we want to go. And then it's just a matter of, you know, Adam making cool sounds at the guitars and Bianca getting cool bass line, and then me just enunciating and and rocking out. And, you know, it all comes together.
So you said you work with a producer, and that's an interesting term these days, because that word is kind of ambiguous now.
I know. It could be anything.
You're right. But it used to be what I think it is you're talking about. So talk to me a little bit about the role your producer serves for you and what that's like in your process tracking.
Oh, man. He does a lot, man.
He's like a spirit animal for sure.
Yeah. Because we recorded all of our albums, and honestly, almost every song, he really is like a fifth member of our band.
That's what I was thinking you were going to say.
He is such a special part of what we do, mm-hmm. You know, and he, like I say, he's also our best friend, because, I mean, we started this band like 9 years ago, and he was our first guy who ever recorded us. And so he's been there this whole time through all the things we've been through, and so I really feel like he's a big part of it, you know?
It's like a trust thing.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So. It's also a luck thing. We're very lucky we came across each other.
Yeah. And
I think it's also birds of a feather flock together. We have personalities that work together.
Nice.
You know, and not everybody's personalities are going to mesh. We're just very lucky.
Yeah.
That we're also symbiotic together.
Yeah.
Lucky because, talk to me about what having the producer around, what you feel like that does for you that you wouldn't have if you were in a vacuum on your own, if you were just left to have no producer. You're lucky because it's a good thing, but I'm interested what the good thing is, because I think a lot of people don't understand what it's like when you can have this spirit animal extra member. I'm grateful that I've been able to be that for a handful of bands. Shout out Summer Survivors and Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, and that's how I want to play with them. But long story, total drift. I'm very curious about what you feel like were the additions, the things that you know you're lucky to have, and what you think would be lacking if you didn't have that.
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this opportunity to give a shout out to our number one supporter, Tweed Suit Shop.
Hey guys, I'm Donald with Tweeds. If you're ever in the market for a custom suit, tuxedo, sport coat, whatever it might be, we'd love the opportunity for you to come in, take all your measurements, make sure we get you the perfect fit and the perfect look. We'd love to see you at one of our locations.
So remember, if you want to get yourself fresh like this, tip to tail, see Tweeds at one of their locations in Sarasota, St. Pete, or Tampa. Please enjoy the rest of the episode.
I know one right off the rip.
All right, go ahead.
It's basically when he tells me, you got to do it again. You got to do it again. Nope, that's not it. I'm going to need another one. I'm going to need another one.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you know, and I look forward to those moments because it only makes me better. It only makes me grow. And sometimes you might get, like, depending on who's telling you, do it again and how they're telling you to do it. Yeah. You might get a little agitated or whatever, but we make it so fun, and we're making funny noises to each other through the microphone. and so he is drilling me. He's doing something that's serious, but we're doing it in a good way, in a productive way. And yeah. I think that's a very important thing that he does, is that he's going to drill us, whereas I would probably do it maybe 3 or 4 times at home.
Yeah.
And then be like, that sounds pretty good. Whereas he's like, I need just a little more roll of the R here. Yes. Or I need a little more t here.
Was there a point at which that made you uncomfortable, whether it was him or anyone else correcting you or coaching you like that?
Nobody's intimidated me yet. Nobody's been so mean to me that they made me feel
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yeah. Nobody's gotten me that far yet.
Because that's the thing a lot of times, too, with vocalists, especially when you have a producer who's trying to make corrections or guide you. Yeah. It's easy to take that stuff personal because it's your voice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as personal as can possibly be.
Yes.
100%.
He has just such a good ear, and he hears things that you wouldn't normally hear. He's an incredible musician, and we're so lucky because, like, he'll hear little parts to put in, like little melodies I would have never thought of. And it, like, adds a whole nother level to the song. And, like, I'll play a bass line, think it's so good. And it's like I went a little bit outside the fret, and he can hear that. He can hear when I'm, like, an iota out of tune. He's like, retune the A string. And then sure enough, it's, like, the tiniest bit. Like, he's just such a good ear. He's awesome.
So I guess it would go without saying, but I would like to ask, would your advice be to younger bands or people that are starting up to be open to finding people like that?
100%. Yes.
Having someone outside the band, too, like an unbiased opinion, sometimes we're all like, we love that. But it's like, he's like, hey, guys, maybe we should change that because we've, like, get demo-itis, as they say, where you hear something. Yes. I'm sure you know what that is. And he's like, y'all have heard it this way for so long that you don't realize that maybe it should change a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's so good to have that.
He explains it to us why it would sound better this yes. way sometimes and stuff. And he's mm-hmm. and you have to be with somebody smart enough
to know,
to let you know why it's going to work better that way.
Yeah.
And caring enough to not make you feel like you're getting talked down to.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's a delicate line.
It is. I would say it's extremely important, especially for a new band. You can't do it yourself. And if you can, you're amazing. That's very tough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm specifically good at singing. I'm not good at playing guitar or playing bass. She's specifically good at bass. He's good at guitar. And so we all play our roles. He's good at producing.
Yeah.
You want to let people play their roles.
Exactly.
And help you build your loaf of bread.
That's a very good point, letting people play their roles. It gets, I guess, tempting to try to be everything or,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how you get these singles recorded and we get to the other side of COVID, this is when performing starts to ramp up quite a bit more for you again, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so take me to there. The world's starting to speed up again. You're starting to get on some more bills again. What's that looking like?
Well, we're from Florida, so.
Adam calls me up. He goes, I got an idea. I'm thinking of driving. What do you think? And I'm like, dude,
can we do
yeah, how do you do? What do we do? And he set it up. This man came. It was his brainchild. He built it. He made it happen. And it was like the first time we brought everybody together.
It was so cool, man.
And everybody drove out there. They had their trucks and their cars. And it was like a drive-in movie, but we were your show.
That's awesome.
Dude, it was so awesome. I couldn't believe it.
That was the first breakout. And then we were like, and then it all started kind of, you know, slowly getting back to normal. And slowly mm-hmm. but surely.
So at what point do you start picking up the bigger gigs? You start getting, like, the reggae rise-ups and stuff like that start to happen. How does that unfold?
2021, I'd say, is when we started, like, getting really cool show offers again because everyone, like, had the confidence to do festivals again. I would say around there we started getting, like, some cool looks and everything. And then now, fast forward to now, I would say, like, this year has been a really cool year for us. I feel like everything's finally, like, back to normal. Like, we did tons of festivals, and it took a few years, man, for everything to kind of settle back in, I feel like.
How did we get that first Reggae Rise Up gig?
Well, that was 2019, and I think, like, there's like, all right, we waited long enough. This band has a following here. Yeah,
they're
here
in the neighborhood.
We have to put them on. They've been freaking asking us for, like, 5 years. If they'll leave us alone, I'll put them on. And I think they saw, like, oh, wow, they really do have a following, because I'm sure they probably thought, oh, they're so green.
Right.
But we went on, and at, like, 1 o'clock, we probably brought – I'm not saying they were just for us, but there's definitely 1,000 people out there.
Oh, it was like 3,000 people.
Yeah. It felt like 3,000, didn't it?
Well, because there's a picture of me. That was the first time I ever crowd surfed.
Yeah.
I brought a surfboard that day.
And you didn't tell us, by the way.
Yeah, and they go, why do you have a surfboard, Jay? And I go, don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it.
Didn't tell us anything.
And then I got 4 dudes off to the side, and I was like, listen, boys, this is the deal. Last song, I'm going to hop up. I mean, you guys are going to pick this up, and I'm going to hop on it. You walk out there, and we're going to go. And I'm going to crowd surf, and we did it. And then they were like, what is going on? What is he doing? And then it was so cool. And that was like, now I see people crowd surfing all the time. But that first one was just.
It was epic, as no one, even us, did not know.
Yeah, we were a live wire. It was a huge show for us. We were so excited. Yeah. Everybody's emotions were so high. It was incredible.
Oh my gosh, it was so cool.
Incredible.
Well, that brings me to, I guess, maybe a question I could have started with. You guys have an incredibly infectious live energy, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, this is known. If someone's going to your show, it's party time. We're going to dance. It's on, right? Okay. So how important is it for you to make sure that that vibe gets nurtured?
It's everything.
It is everything.
It is literally the everything to me. Like, to us, it's like, because I'd say that's what they expect, and that's what we expect, and we think it's fun. It's like, we want to give that show.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like we walk off and we're like, I feel like we gave every single bit of energy we had, and that's the best feeling, you know?
It's a real moment. It's really exciting. You're going out there, and you just want to do your best for them, and you want them to feel their best watching you do it. It's like I almost see it as like a spiritual thing. It's like very important. Right before we get up there, we're all in the right headspace.
Yeah.
We're all with each other. We, you know, whatever, we drink a shot together, or, you know, we have our little relaxing moments to really gather our thoughts and our energy, and then we get out there and we do it, and, you know, we're fully charged at that point in time. We're ready to go.
That's the magic right there.
Yeah.
That's being greater than the sum of your parts.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit then about some of the things that you find in one another that helps keep this going. The magic in the sauce, as it were, that you said it, birds of a feather flock together. How do you keep that as your centerpiece? Because being in a band is a lot of work. It can be discouraging. It can be frustrating. You know, you can have a bad day, but you still got to get out there and give them a dude who's ready to crowd surf. You still got to go out there and slay a baseline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what are the things that you draw on from one another in your experiences to keep that fun, the focus, so it can be the fuel?
I mean, for me, Jay is literally like, he's like the match to the gasoline. Because we've played with so many people, me and Adam, and like the first time I played with him, I was like, this is nothing like I've ever experienced. Because he brings so much energy to the stage. Like, he literally makes it such a fun show every time. And I've never had that with anyone else. So I would say that's, for me, like, you bring just like fun energy and like life to everything.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would say that for me, one, we are always laughing.
Yeah.
We are always cracking jokes with each other. We're always having a great time. I would say I'm very grateful for B's organizational skills and for her presence and awareness. She knows people's names. She remembers names. She remembers faces. She's extremely good at that and interacting with people and, you know, making sure that everybody feels loved as far as our social media goes and everything like that. And she captures a lot of the great moments. And then Adam, I don't know if we have enough time.
I know. He really is the man behind the curtain, so to speak. That
I don't even
want to
get emotional, but he's like, we go through our highs and we go through our lows. We've been through so much. We go through so much all the time, don't we, bro?
Amen.
And
Adam's sitting right off to the side.
Yeah,
he's
right up there. He makes me stronger. He makes me better. Sometimes he pisses me off. And, you know, I piss him off too. But we're a dynamic duo, he and I. And we're powerful together, really powerful together. And I cherish that. And yeah, it's gotten us really far.
I was going to say, it seems like you found a way to transmit that to the audience, and that's really special.
Yeah. So the three of us were like, we're pretty strong.
I like the three amigos.
We are the
man.
Tripod. We are.
Yeah. Hell yes.
We are the three amigos. Yes. And but we've got our drummer playboy Josh, and he's really awesome too. And he is striving so hard to be so good.
Yeah.
And he's changing himself. And you know, when you see people like that, and they dedicate themselves to your process, and you see them trying so hard and working towards getting there, you know, you got to respect it. And we're grateful to have him on board as well with us. He's an amazing individual. And yeah, we're just building this great crew. Paul,
yes,
absolutely.
Dude,
one of the most
so
amazing
much.
People. I mean, he handles everything. The first day on the job, he had to split me and my dad up, because you know, as a tour manager, you have to be like, bus call.
Yeah.
And his first day, he's got to tell me bus call when I'm seeing my dad. My dad's from out of town and stuff. So he's like, this is horrible. And I'm like,
but he did it.
I was like, tell him he's got to do it, because if he does it,
we'll talk forever.
It'll all be easier from this point on. And he's just so good. He takes care of everything. And people playing their roles, you know, he takes care of the logistics. He takes care of the people at the venues that we need to talk to, stage times, everything. He tells me when I need to brush my teeth, you know what I'm saying?
It's and like, he's good for a laugh.
He's
always down for anything.
Yes.
He's the best.
Yeah, but it takes time to build the crew. It takes time for all the birds to flock together, mm-hmm. And we're getting closer and closer to having our flock be really tight, and we're getting ready to fly south.
Awesome. Well, you know, and that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you too. Like, it seems like you guys have really done a good job of finding and building on unity and commonality. And that's hard enough to do in a band. And the byproduct of that is, of course, the trust you guys have and why you can write together and sing and let your producer correct you and not feel like he's busting your balls. What are some of the things that you feel really helped you guys have the trust that you can now build these things? Was it just a matter of the slog?
It was a feeling. It just felt like this is right. Because obviously, like, me and Adam have been together for a long time, so the trust was already there. And then when we started hanging out with Jay, I was like, this literally feels like I feel like we've been a band together for years and years, even though it was like the first few months. And I was like, this just feels right.
Just straight intuition.
Yeah, I was like, this is a good person.
And we're also honest with each other to a brutal point sometimes.
Especially Jay, but that's why we love him, dude. People say, you know what I love Jay is, like, he would say the same thing to a guy on the homeless guy as a celebrity. Like, he would be just as honest with either and treat them the same. Like, he's just always honest no matter who it is. And
respect.
Wears his heart on his sleeve. It's cool. I don't know a lot of people like that. They change around different people. He doesn't.
I think the word is, I don't judge people off their accolades. I judge them off their personality and who they are as a person.
That's,
you know?
Yes.
I don't care what. I think it's great that you've done something amazing with your life, but what kind of person are you is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Amen to that. I love having you guys on the show for that, because that's literally the backbone of this. So I very much appreciate you saying that. So when you get into an environment where you're writing now, you're at rehearsal, and you've got some of the hardest things that bands have to do. You like each other. You trust each other. You know you can write together. You got the hardest things licked. Now you're just... you can write music. How do you approach that? How do you approach writing? Just jams? Does somebody come in with stuff written?
We schedule a time. And then, I'll tell them exactly how we do it.
Yeah, do
how
it. We, all right.
We schedule it. We call up. We have a producer, and we also have somebody that helps us write as well. So, and basically what that does is the three of us being together all the time, sometimes we are biased. So it's nice to have an outside opinion that helps us to really refine our songs and make sure that we're writing about the most important thing and getting the message across. And so what we do is we schedule a writing session. Then Adam comes up with some guitar. He sends us over the ideas. I listen to him 5 minutes before we start. I feel whatever emotion is being brought out of it because I like only using 5 minutes or so before we start because I don't want to have any predisposed or predispositions or whatever, you know. I don't want to have any ideas of what I want it to breathe itself. I want it to come to life right before us. So I let it do its thing and I just take whatever emotions it pushes on me or makes me feel and I send it out there and then I run it past the gang. I say, well, this is what I'm feeling from what he's playing. And then they go, that's good.
Let's build on it.
All right, let's build on it. And so then we take that idea and we just get deeper and deeper and we find different facets of it. And that's how the process goes now. That's the writing process.
So you always write collaboratively?
Yes.
Yes.
But the idea is a lot of time like on different songs. That's why it'd be cool to do a deep dive. Like some of them, like someone has an idea, whether it's like a hook or guitar chords. And then you build on that. But we always, always finish a song together. Always. Yeah. Which
like
is
this
cool.
New one coming out, you came up with Waves, right?
Yeah. I had the little hooky hook and then brought it to the band. Then we finished it within probably an hour. It was crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
And you just, when you do that, you're just straight pounding them out, working them out in real time together. You're not sitting there, and this may sound stupid, but you're not sitting there writing with the computer and tracking and listening to stuff back or anything like that. You're straight pounding it out in real time.
Yep, we're sitting there. We all share a note. So we're on a Zoom call, and then we share a notepad, and we just write. And we all have the notepad. We all share the notepad, and we all write. And we all are there present with each other, you know, so we're talking. We can see each other's faces. Technology is amazing, man. You can do amazing things in the world today. I think you just need to sit down and tell yourself, okay, maybe this isn't the ideal way. We're not in person. But that's not going to slow us down.
No.
And that's not going to stop us. We're still here doing the thing. This is the idea. This is the process. We're here doing it.
Yeah.
Do you find that writing collaboratively is, for want of a better way of putting it, the Serenation way? Or if one of you came with a completed song, you would just perform it?
Oh, yeah. If we liked it, it'd be like, oh, I love that. Cool.
Yeah, we've never done that, though. We always work together. I don't know why. We have always worked together.
Yeah, and I think that's very cool. That used to be a much more common thing, and you would see in the publishing rights every band member was there and not just the...
Not just one person.
Yeah. So how much do you think that plays into everyone's ownership of the music for when you're performing it for people?
As far as, like, who owns the emotions?
Yeah, like, you all feel ownership to the music that way. Do you feel like, since you do everything collaboratively, it inherently ties you together as a group so much more so than if you were out just performing one another's completed songs? This one was all Bianca's song.
I feel like that, right?
I feel like... For me personally, they feel like they're real. It's like my life almost. And then sometimes some of the things that were, you know, written in there, it's almost as if they manifest themselves.
Isn't that crazy?
It is very weird. It's like I sing them so much, they start to become true or something.
That's strange. A very interesting thing. This is something I like to ask creative people, regardless of what their discipline is. I don't even know how to phrase this without leading it too much. When you come up with an idea or you come up with some lyrics, do you feel that you came up with those lyrics or you were just in the headspace where they came to you? And equally true for your bass lines.
I feel like they come to me. I feel like
the same.
Yeah. It's like I'm so happy that I was gifted with that little hook or bass line or whatever. Like, thank you. You know, thank you, universe.
I never know where it's coming from. Not even with my live show. I don't know what's going to happen. I know I'm going to go out there. I'm going to give it 100% till my heart catches on fire. So it's like you never know. And when it comes to you, that's like the magic.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the magic.
Do you think that's a lot of the reason why, or is that what led you to the 5-minute practice?
What is the five?
so that you just listen to it 5 minutes before you're going to go write, not stew on it for an hour before you, or for days before you come in and sing on one of their pieces?
Well, yeah, I think because one time I had done it and it kind of slowed down the process. It was too much thinking. I was thinking too much.
Yeah, you weren't overthinking it.
I don't have time to overthink it if I give myself 5 minutes in a feeling.
Yeah.
So you would say then spontaneity is a friend to your creative process.
Oh yeah, it's like
it's awesome.
That's the birth.
It's the best.
Yeah, that's where spontaneity. That's how the world, primordial ooze or whatever, the Big Bang. You know, it was like bam. It was quick. And that's how things happen. You know, and it's just. Phew.
Yeah.
What is that feeling like? Can you describe what that feeling's like when you know what's coming to you is clicking? You got an idea and it's working. When you were gifted with that little hook and you were like, wait a minute, now this was a good one. Is there a way you can quantify or describe what that feeling is like? Because for people who aren't creative, or for people who like get writer's block, you know what I mean? Or struggle very hard to let an idea come to them. Sometimes when an idea comes to them, they don't even realize, because they don't even know what that feels like. They're just, this is a trash idea. So I guess I'm kind of asking you, how do you get to the point where you can calm your mind enough to do your thing and then recognize when you're doing it?
This is going to sound cheesy.
Well, it's a romantic question.
We love cheese. We love cheese around here.
I would say when you're doing it and it feels good and you're doing it right and you're doing it well, it feels like you're chasing your destiny. It feels like you are in alignment with all of the things that you've believed your whole entire life, and that the person that you want, that you're pretending to be, you are becoming. You know, all those things are coming together, and it's incredible.
It's like a synchronicity feeling.
Yeah. And you know, you're not there yet, but you know that you're making the moves in the right direction. And that. It's an incredible feeling. It's euphoric for sure. And when you're done writing it, you're proud of yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I just did work. I did what I needed to do. And also when we're done, when we write our songs and we're done, we just kind of like leave it be, you know, and then get back to living our lives. We've came in, we've worked. We've done what we needed to do. We were 100% hyper-focused at that point in time. And now we're done doing it. And so don't hyper-focus on it until you need to do it again, or you're going to waste unnecessary energy. Let it breathe. Let the creativity have its moment of stillness so that it can come back in full force.
That's valuable insight.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do. Sometimes it's hard to put something down.
I know, but it's good. Because you can't start to overthink things, just like you said earlier. It's just better to just let it breathe and then come back to it with a fresh mind. And then you realize, man, this is a banger. Whereas if I would have listened to it that day, it might have been like, maybe we should have changed that part or whatever. Because you just start to overthink.
Yeah, and full circle, this is where producer and writing partner can be hugely advantageous too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Like I said, that unbiased person, man.
And that the unbiased is so important.
So important.
It's so important to have somebody there that can just give you a little bit of outsider's perspective. But you want them to have a good perspective. And don't, this is simple, but don't trust anybody that hasn't done anything that you respect.
Right.
You know, if they don't have, if there's no proof in the pudding, there's no proof in the pudding.
Right.
You're flying blind. Essentially, you and the person you're with, you're both flying blind. And there's faith. You can have faith, and it could work out. But I choose the other route.
Right. Yeah. It can be almost equally detrimental when if you choose the blind faith route and it doesn't work, it can be doubly discouraging.
Yeah. As opposed to someone, you wouldn't want to walk down a trail with a Sherpa that had never been down the trail.
Yeah.
You need a Sherpa who has navigated these waters before, mountain or, you know.
Whatever.
You need a good navigator. At least somebody who knows a little bit of what's going on.
Yeah.
A little more than you.
Yeah, exactly. Amen to that. And having the humbleness as an artist and a creative to invite those people in, that can be really difficult. That can be scary.
It's easy for me because I look at them and I go, you've done this. I have to listen to you.
Yeah.
I have to listen to you because I know that what you've done has worked. You've shown me.
Yeah.
That's an open-mindedness that can be difficult for people to maintain. How do you, is it your group drive collectively and individually constantly for your own betterment that makes it so you don't have to feel like, hey, I'm just being told what to do. Hey, my writing partner's just trying to make this his song now. How do you, this is a word that a lot of musicians and artists in general brought up in here. How do you let the ego go?
Oh man, it's tough, but I think that if you can learn to do that in music, you can do that in life and you'll be so much happier and you'll be such like a better person. So if you can do it in that scenario, you can bring that with you wherever you go. So I think it's a life lesson to anybody, especially us.
Yeah, I believe that if you came in there with too much ego, you wouldn't get it done.
You wouldn't write a good song, probably.
Yeah, you'd put up, there'd be a wall, there'd be a blockage somewhere, and you guys would end up coming to a standstill.
Yeah.
You have to yield. Yeah. You have to know when to stand up, and you have to know when to yield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Powerful. That's what helps it, ultimately, the product be able to translate to your audience, though, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And there are times, like... when I do, I know, like, there's a song that we wrote that sonically I know that if the chorus came sooner, it would probably do well for the song. But there was something in the song that was extremely important to me emotionally, and I had to have it in there. And I don't think that it did anything wrong to the song, but, you know, there are different ways of doing it, and they asked me, you know, is this is something we would maybe like to change. How important is this to you? And they respected me enough when I said it's extremely important to me.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, we'll make it work then.
That's awesome. So being considerate of one another is a huge part of the power of your band.
Yeah, but if it was going to cause that big of a problem, I wouldn't have stood so steadfast in my convictions.
Yeah.
If I had known that it was going to be a big problem, but they came to me and they showed to me, like, we can go one of two ways.
That's very cool. Yeah. Well, and plus, I always would tell people when I was producing with them, there's infinite songs to be written.
Oh, my gosh, it's endless.
Yeah, so. So how long between, do you finish the material before you go in the studio, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so when you went into this studio this last time, when was that? When did you track this last record?
Oh my gosh, we were tracking up probably like 3 or 4 months ago. I think we were in Wishwall, 5 months ago. Like the last songs that we were going to put on there. So yeah, I mean, almost like right up to the 5 months before, 6 months before. Yeah.
And how long did it take you to record it?
I mean, these songs are from like years and years. So it's like some of them were written like 2 years ago and some of them were written this year, which is really crazy and cool about this album. It literally is a story of awesome. Everything. Oh, yeah. You know?
Some of those songs were written like pre-COVID.
And they just kind of got brushed aside. And that's why it's cool to drop an album, because like even though maybe it's not like that single like serenation sound, might throw some fans off like this sounds different, but on an album it's cool because it's like you can just put all of them on there and just let them be themselves, and it's cool that way.
Another bonus, another plus mark for the album, Colin.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also very interesting to see like what the music is turning itself into, because we as artists have never really pigeonholed ourselves or tried not to by like making any references or cussing or anything like that in our music. We've kind of just kind of, I feel like we wanted it to be open.
Yeah.
It's so that we didn't necessarily shut anything out, so that we can, you know, fully enjoy this musical journey that we're on. Like I see so many artists nowadays and they're doing so many different genres and stuff. And we've kind of like, I don't even know if we have a genre. We just make music.
It's like, I know. I'm not going to lie. When people hear this album, I am not joking. There is so many different styles of music on it. But, like, that is just the way we are. I would never try to, like, put us in a box. Like, if one of us has an idea and says, that's not us, it's like, well, clearly it is because we wrote it, you know?
What parts of you guys as a unit, though, other than the obvious open-mindedness, would allow you to do that? Because you could easily just keep making reggae rock albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know like what I mean? Dubstep or whatever.
Yeah. What, yeah. Fill in the blank.
The same rhythmic yeah. thing every time.
Is it because you all value having latitude as creatives, or is just the fear of being pigeonholed?
Definitely not the fear. Because if we,
I think it's because we all know that we have creative potential, and I mean, I don't know what I'm capable of.
There you go.
Yeah.
We just love so many different styles of music. Like, yeah. we all love, like, rock, like, punk rock, emo. Like, I love emo music. And so I feel like that comes through in our music. It's like, if we wrote a great song and it's not necessarily, like, a happy beach song, it should we not play it? Because it's like, sometimes we play those songs live.
It's a little heavier, like, you know?
Like, do you feel that? Do you ever feel that?
Feel what?
That, like, if you don't write a for want of a better way of putting it, a beach song, that this isn't going to be something that's going to fly? Or
no, because our hardcore fans are so accepting, because our first album, honestly, there were a few rock songs on that album, and I feel like it kind of let them know right off the rip, like, we're not just going to play happy beach music.
Okay.
But I feel like we've even kind of leaned into that more and more, because it's just like, as we matured, we started playing all different kinds of styles and incorporating different things into our songs.
It's tough because we are pigeonholed at the end of the day in the reggae industry, and that's what it's called. But it's like the new age reggae industry. You know, it's not like the old Peter Tosh type thing. But when people hear the word reggae, they assimilate it with Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and things like that. So they're thinking they're going to come to a show and it's going to have that Jamaican vibe or whatever, and what they don't understand, maybe some people don't understand about the genre, is that it's not that reggae. Now it's like, reggae is like, I don't even know. It's just like a blanket term. I almost wish we had a different one, because it doesn't encompass the bands. Like, Catastro was definitely not reggae. They were like
the furthest
pop
thing,
so sick. And then, you know, you've got Aurora Wave coming out.
I was just going to say that.
And Aurora Wave is like rocking out.
They're
incredible. Know?
I'd love to have
them
awesome,
on here.
They're
awesome.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, and then we're coming out and we've got all these different, and we get a little folky, we get a little rocky, we get a little poppy, we
Heck
get a little
yeah.
beachy,
You're
you know,
hear
and
it.
It's like,
no, I'm stoked.
And so it's hard to come up in this reggae industry underneath that blanket of reggae, if you're not reggae.
Right, because it's so synonymous with, you said, like, those stereotypical things.
Yeah, and
people can't help but do it. You just automatically, innately say, oh, well, you know, you assimilate them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer, because I know that there's a lot of great bands in that genre that could be doing great things, but they've just kind of, including, I feel like, us sometimes, too. And,
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I don't know. It's almost like, why don't they just call it like the music movie?
Trop rock or something.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting thing. It's quite the umbrella, I must say. But that, I think, is a good thing. I think it's a good thing. But the way it is counterintuitive is that when you say reggae, people instantly assume Bob Marley.
And then they also think that there's a bunch of pot smokers out there and that it's like a bunch of hippies and stuff. And no, I mean, now that you go out to these shows, you go to Reggae Rise Up, and you're looking at, you know, CEOs of businesses.
Yes.
You're looking at predominant people in your community. You're looking at everybody in your community. You know, now it's like everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
There's no.
Yeah, that is one of the things. I'll ask you this, and then we'll get you out of here on a fun one. This is one of the things. The reggae community is kind of a double-edged sword in that it has all these presuppositions that people make about it, but one of the things about it is actually comprised of an amazing cross-section of people who are incredibly supportive. So talk to me a little bit about what it's like to play for the reggae community.
Oh my gosh, they're so nice.
Oh,
they're
man.
So sweet and accepting, and like, you
good
know,
cooks.
Yes.
Well, they feed us. Like, they put you in their house. Like, they don't even know you. I can't tell you how many times when we were on tour, like, people we never met that just loved our music trusted us to stay at their house. I know that lots of bands do that, but I just couldn't believe it.
We're friends with them to this day.
That's
the very first tour we ever went on. Shout out Dave. Thank you for having us in your house, baby.
Dave and Brittany. So
That's
many
right.
people.
Brittany. And it's just, yeah, those people, the whole... They are so close. Close-knit, and they're so diehard. I respect them. They're incredible. And it's great to get their support.
Yeah.
when you see them out there, they're showing you love, and they want you to know it, and they want you to be like, I'm here for you.
Yes.
We love you.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
That's very cool.
So cool.
That is so cool, and I appreciate you sharing that, because when I tell people to go to Reggae Rise Up and that sort of thing who aren't necessarily in that community, I always tell them, you know, you'll never be part of a better crowd. Reggae crowds are always so fun, and everybody is just showing love, and you can feel it. So
yeah,
I think exactly. That's very cool.
Just don't wear your brand new shoes out there. It gets a little muddy.
Yeah. That's all good. So let's get you out of here on something fun. I know you got the new EP coming out, a new album coming out, and you've told me that we got a good cross-section of music on it, and I can't wait to hear it. I like to ask bands this question. As a matter of fact, I asked a band this morning this question. Not because I want to know who your favorite bands are, but because I'm wondering who you think would be the best person to roll, the best artists to roll out this package with favorably. So if you could each pick a band that you could have your record release party with, I don't care, dead, gone, fantasy, whatever it is, that you think would be most appropriately paired with you to show this album to the world.
That is so tough. Oh my gosh, who do you think?
I mean, currently, right now, there's an amazing band out there called The Elevators. And they are absolutely incredible. Jackson's voice is just... boy's killing it. I think they're pretty cool. But I mean, that's such a tough question because, you know, I think about Chris Cornell. I love Chris Cornell. You know?
Yeah.
Like Pink Floyd. I don't know. Like, there's a million bands.
Somebody answered Metallica and Pink Floyd, I think. So we've had, don't be afraid to color outside the lines with the answer.
I think realistically, if it was like to really happen, like, I think Elevators would be awesome, but they would have to be released. We'd have to be, I don't know, they're higher on the tier than we are. So, but they're cool.
Man, that is, so you're saying, like, not your favorite band, someone you think that, like, would be a good fit with us.
The good complimentary one to birth this album to the world.
Oh my gosh, that is so freaking tough. You know, honestly, this is, like, totally off the rip, but I feel like we would do so well with, like Mad Caddies.
Nice.
Like, I know they're not, like, a super big name or whatever, but, like, they... I love that they can do punk, folk, reggae, pop, just like us, and they do it so well and so seamlessly, and I love when bands do that. I feel like they're kind of like us. Like, you could listen to a reggae pop song and then a hard rock song.
Heck yeah.
So honestly, if I'm not saying I love Mad Caddies, like, I have lots of favorite bands, but I think if we were to play with someone, they would probably be a really cool fit.
Heck yeah. Well, no matter who you're playing with for the record release show, we will be there. The Keep the Hotel Empty family will represent, no question.
Thank you very
much. So Bianca, Jay, Adam, thank you so much for coming down. Thank you so much for sharing. You guys will definitely be back. I don't even have to tell you, you're welcome back. You'll definitely be back.
Awesome.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you. That was amazing.
I feel like we filled the hotel with some good vibes today.
Shit, yes, sir. I'm into that.
Now we empty it out for the new ones.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.